For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, it's been a little while since we last recorded, which was after the All-Star break or the All-Star game. I actually kind of like that because it allowed us to see many more games from the new Jimmy Butler Golden State Warriors. So we're going to kick off the show and talk about the playoff chances here and the Jimmy effect. We'll also talk about bit of a shakeup atop the women's college basketball rankings with some of the big teams losing. And was Texas number one last week too?
After Notre Dame lost to NC State, Texas became number one.
Okay. And so
that was, I think that was starting on this past Monday.
So there's been a shakeup and we'll talk a little bit about that. There's a player that Brian has been pretty high on named AZ Fudd, who's making waves about what she's going to do. So we'll talk about that as it pertains to the Valkyries draft. And that'll be it. We're probably not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about the rest of the NBA, but as we talk about the Warriors playoff chances, there will be stuff about the teams. So I was hoping that they were going to pull that game out against Philly last night, because it would show that they have a plan, a little bit of a better plan B for the possibility of one of the old dudes going down. Now that changes, and we can talk about this as well with the return of Jonathan Kuminga, which is forthcoming. I think it's going to happen on this current road trip. They're in Charlotte tomorrow. That would be actually a good place to re-debut him, because I don't know if you watched the Charlotte game the other night, but that's like a G League team playing NBA basketball. That was a rough, they have some rough rotation players, especially when LaMelo is out of the game. But let's start with the Jimmy topic. I guess you've watched this team over, you know, since you were a little kid, and you've watched this Steph era. We even had 2022 where they do it without KD, and it's really Klay on his sort of last Warriors legs and Steph willing the team to win. What is your favorite basketball characteristic about Jimmy Butler as far as how he affects how the Warriors play?
This might sound like, I don't know, a little corny, but like his mind. Like, I just think him, Draymond, and Steph are all on the same page. Like, they have that like veteran savviness about them. And, you know, he's someone who's been to the finals twice. And I think that, you know, he can relate to a lot of like what he, like a, what a finals team feels like, what, you know, how he thinks. And I just see like on defense, him and Draymond always kind of being on the same page. On offense, like how quickly he picked up the Warriors scheme of getting it back to Steph. Like, so many players don't know how to do that, let alone like a star who wants to get his own bucket. I just feel like he's already fit in because he's just such a smart basketball player. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that. And like, you know, just his presence in general of like commanding attention from the defenders. So that, you know, it's no accident that Stephen Curry has been like a top 10 player since Jimmy's been on this team, right?
Yeah.
We can agree with that.
Absolutely. So. Did you see the latest, you know, the Ringer top 100 or whatever?
They gave him number six. Is that what it was?
I think it was six.
That might even still be low, like just based on how he's been playing. Like he's been playing so good in these past, you know, since they got him.
But then you watch that Philly game yesterday and you're like, okay, like he played really well and they could not stay with Philadelphia, who is also not a very, Philadelphia is one of the worst teams in the NBA right now. And the Warriors could not stay with them when Steph was off the court, which is kind of, it's not unpredictable. Like we kind of knew that that's what the team is, but man, you should at least be able to beat that team. And maybe it's just Quentin Grimes just goes off and like that, that's like a once in a lifetime game for him. It is a once in a lifetime game. It is the single best actual NBA basketball game he has ever played in his career against them. And so maybe that's a little bit of a fluke. I just would have loved to see them pull it out, because then you're a little bit, you can say that Jimmy has improved us on the court and he has helped us figure out some of the things when he's not on the court, but they didn't. And maybe that, again, maybe that's a Kuminga fix. My favorite thing about Jimmy, there is a certain confidence that he has that I have, you know, when Jimmy was coming up, his game felt a lot more different than it is today. And especially with this Warriors team, I almost think he's, you know, you mentioned him fitting in the offense with Steph. I almost think he's overpassing, because what he has essentially become on offense is Andre Iguodala, because nobody expects him to shoot. And so I think what's going to happen is they're going to start daring him to shoot three-pointers, and they're going to have to figure out the on-court geometry to not put him in those positions. Because you can tell he either wants to get the motion going where he can pull people away from Steph, because that is the best benefit right now, is Steph Curry just looks so much more free on offense. And I know people have been saying that, but that was the first thing I noticed when Jimmy joined, is like, oh, Steph just looks like there's been a mountain of weight lifted off of his shoulders. But I do think he needs to score, because if he doesn't score, then the teams are going to realize what he's trying to do, and they're just going to sag off of him.
Mm-hmm.
They're already sagging off of Draymond. And then when Kuminga comes in, that's the game plan for him, is you sag off of him. And so how much of that will continue to give Steph that freedom, we'll have to see how it works out. But he is so confident at his ability to be a savvy vet. Like he's pump faking these young boys up into the rafters. And it's like, what do you think he's doing? But he's so good at it. And I don't know. I think I was trying to think about this the other day. Like, of course, you know, my basketball playing days are over, but you still think in that mentality, how would I guard Jimmy? Just the mindset, obviously the physical abilities, there's just no way. But the mindset to me is like, okay, don't jump at all. Play him as if he's just like a post player, like he's a center or a power forward, where he's just going to try and be a bruiser and get in the middle, and he's going to try to do stuff. You just got to stay your ground and play hands up. And you know, it's about positioning and stuff. But a lot of the times he's got some really young athletic dude guarding him, and all they want to do is block his shot. And he's sending these guys with pump fakes out of the gym, which is his veteran savviness. So I really appreciate that about his game. He's just, like you said, smart, the mindset. Do you sense that he is going to try and score more? Like his flat-footed three-pointer looks terrible right now. He's not even really trying the mid-game. I know he personally said it's all about him getting back in shape, which some of it is being in game shape, but some of it also tells me, like, what the hell were you doing in Miami, mm-hmm. when you were not playing or when you were getting suspended? Maybe there's other stuff dealing. I see that somebody sued him for I guess he trashed, they say that he trashed the place that he was renting and he still owes like money or something. I don't think that was Centel. Centel did make a comeback this week,
though. I didn't even see that.
I think it was like a front office sports or something. But like, do you see his offensive game coming, or is this really just more about freeing up Steph and Jimmy Butler being Andre 2.0?
I mean, well, you're right in the sense that like he needs to. It's going to become predict. Like I have the stats right here, actually. So I keep pulling the stats from the day that his first game against Chicago, which was February 8th, to current day. And Stephen Curry has been averaging 30.4 points per game since that game.
It looks awesome.
And Jimmy is only at 16.4. Mm-hmm. So I think it, and then the third, I think, is also around that Jimmy area as well. It's probably like Pods. Yeah, Pods is at 12.4. But I think you're right. And he needs to. Like he can't stick around 16.4. He has to kind of get around to the 18-20 range on better efficiency. And but I think, you know, that's kind of what I feel like I keep hearing on the Plus Minus podcast is the game shape. It's kind of what Jimmy's saying, too. Like, he's getting back into shape still, you could tell. But, he needs to be more of an offensive threat, because that's kind of the player we were trading for. Mm-hmm. You know, we said that on this podcast, we thought that it's like before Jimmy, it was our defense that was kind of really good and our offense was terrible. And post Jimmy, we were saying that we thought it would do a flip flop. It's kind of hasn't, like, mm-hmm. for some reason, like the defensive ratings like gotten really good. I still don't know how much I believe in that, though, because if I know that Quentin Grimes game is like it's like a come to Jesus game, like it's the greatest game he'll ever have in his life. But at the same time, that's not a first where a player like that goes off against the Warriors. Like, and I think some of it is like, this is the team, like it's always like young players, like this is the team that was dominating when I was younger. Like, and Steph Curry's right here. Like, I look up to him and I want to like cook him. Like, what it reminded me of was the Lonnie Walker game in game four of the playoffs against the Lakers, where Lonnie Walker was just like automatic against Steph, and Steph wasn't even necessarily playing bad defense. Lonnie was just like hitting. Funny enough, Lonnie Walker is now on that team. But that's kind of the game. It was when Quentin kept going at Steph every single time, because they stuck Steph on Quentin Grimes, which I think was the right matchup to start the game. And then quickly, like, it was like, oh, shoot, now you got to move him to Oubre eventually. But that was what it was kind of reminded me of, is just like he's getting whatever he wants. And I don't even think Steph's necessarily playing bad defense. Steph is just can't, you know, raise up as high as if he wants to get, like, he just becomes an uncontested shot if he just raises up high and is able to hit it. But I think that game kind of shows me this team's identity. Mm-hmm. You traded away a lot of depth. I mean, you still have a lot of depth, but you traded away Wiggs. You traded away Schroeder. And, you know, if Jimmy and or one of Jimmy or Steph is gone, this team, I think, is just full of, you know, I hope this is not necessarily a diss, but because we still have, like, I don't know, Moses Kuminga and Pods are still kind of figuring it out, but they're very complementary right now. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the two stars, it doesn't work, because there's no one who can step into the number two, which we've been talking about for a year now, of, you know, to put pressure on the defense and make it easier for the team. And so I think it's, to me, if one of them are missing, this is a bottom rock. Like, this is like they're going to have a tough time beating most teams. Like, I think they do turn into a very bad version of themselves. And it kind of makes sense when you think of, like, this was already a bad team that traded away their second best player in Wiggs, traded away, you know, Schroeder, who played a lot of minutes, and, you know, a couple of the other guys to get one player. Mm-hmm. So if that one player is missing, this team becomes, you know, the team that lost to Utah that then immediately lost to the Lakers. Like, it's just not a good team. But again, this was kind of fluky in the sense of, like, in that Utah and Lakers game, those two games where they had Jimmy, but he wasn't ready to play yet. In those two games, Stephen Curry didn't play well. And, mm-hmm. or he wasn't playing as well as when Jimmy was on the team. So there is a change in that. Like, he is averaging 30 points per game now. Like, he had 30 last night, I think. or very close to it if he didn't have it.
Steph, about Steph?
Yeah.
Yeah, 29.
Yeah, okay. They didn't have that in those two terrible. I just remember watching this game. It's like, this team is terrible because they just traded everyone and you had no Jimmy. So it was just a worse team with Steph. And I was like, this team's terrible. But this time around, Steph's, you know, is like reinvigorated. But then you have the Quentin Grimes game. Like, that was so. I think they, you know, if Jimmy's there, they'll beat that team. Maybe, you know, 6 times out of 10, they beat that team with that current roster without Jimmy. But I still think
what about if JK is in that game?
That's the thing that's
the differentiator.
Exactly. That's why you still kind of hold on hope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the fit, like, it's so funny because there is a version of JK where he plays with Jimmy, and then there is a version of JK where he's got to play because Jimmy's not playing, and then there's a version of JK where he's got to play because Steph isn't playing, and then there's a version of JK where he's got to play because Draymond can't play. So you're asking this dude to basically have 4 different roles, yet when your team is superpowered, the version of him is going to be the one who kind of has to fit in more than the one where you give more freedom. So that is what I'm most interested in, is how does Jimmy Butler's game affect JK's game? Is he going to be hesitation? Is it going to be hesitation, JK, where swing, 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 he's got an open three, he hears Kerr's voice in the back of his head, and then he hesitates, and then he misses? Like, I want him to be like a very confident and a decisive JK, but at the same time, sometimes when he's been that confident and decisive JK and he's also made mistakes, that's when he gets taken out of the lineup. So
yeah,
it's going to be so interesting how they handle him. And I'm going to guess that Jimmy will be good for him in that sense, like as far as, you know, helping him figure those things out, and maybe also with just teaching him about what he could do easier rather than harder sometimes. Because you remember last year, we were seeing JK kind of get towards the free throw line area, and then he would shoot this little fadeaway, and it seemed like it was going to be his money shot.
Yeah.
And this year, he can't make that shot for whatever reason. Like, it's just not there for him. So
the three's gotten better. That's kind of been like the change. It's like his 3-point shot looks a lot better, and like he's hitting it pretty consistently. Want to know the worst thing about JK coming back?
Gui Santos,
man.
He was so good last night.
Every time I watch him, I'm just like, this guy just keeps possessions alive. And he, like, it's just like the little things, like, to the max. Like, there was a one where, you know, there was a classic, like, someone leaked out and they were on defense and someone gets the rebound and they, like, try to, you know, full court throw it to the guy who leaked out and cherry picked, and Gui Santos just comes out of nowhere and just, like, one hand, like, puts the ball, grabs the ball, and then we're about another offensive possession. Like, he just creates offensive possessions. He's in every single, you know, rebound, you know, area, and he's just, like, tipping balls and grabbing. Like, it's just if any Warriors fan dislikes that player, like, we need to have a conversation.
Okay, before, I'm gonna have a question for you. And you're going to have to think really hard about this. I'll even give it to you, but then I forgot to play our little Warrior sound drop. So I'll play that in a second. But here's what I want you to think about. When JK comes back, who do you want to see have more minutes? Gui, Moses, and GP? Like, I want you to rank the three of them as far as what you personally, not what Steve is going to like, because I think Steve's going to say Gui's going to be third in that list, but what you want to see. But before you answer that question, I forgot to play our drop.
Warriors.
Gui, Moody, GP.
GP was good last night too, though.
He was, but I think that if JK comes back, like, I need him to, I mean, here's JK's fifth new role of, like,
ball stopper.
Yes, we need it. Like, we really need it, so that would be my ranking. And not to discredit what GP does. Like, he's just, like, dunker spot, like, always in, kind of like Gui. He was doing a lot of Gui stuff last night too, of just being in the mix. But hey, like, it would have very much helped if he could have hit some of those 3-pointers. And we know that's not a strong suit for him.
You know, I think Kevin Knox could have also supplied a little juice for them yesterday, but he didn't really do anything.
Yeah, you know, I was actually so scared as a Gui Santos fan when Kevin Knox had that like fourth quarter where he had it all to himself and was just like kind of cooking. I was like, oh my God, this guy has the athleticism that Gui like wishes he had. And if he just like does some of the Gui stuff, like adios, Gui.
Yeah, I know. We are big Wiggins fans. Obviously, we also know that he's not the perfect basketball player, but 2022 is always going to be something that I look back on. And I imagine when Wiggs' career is over, he's going to be very much welcomed back into this franchise for what he's done. But it's so crazy how the league moves. Like when I was a little kid, and you know, the Warrior, even the Warriors were bad, like those were my guys. And I remember in 1987, I think it was 87 or 88, Sleepy Floyd gets traded to the Rockets. And that was my favorite player. And I just assumed, being young, I think I was like 11 or 12, that he was just going to play for his entire career with the Warriors. Like, that's just how I thought. So when he got traded, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that could happen. But in today's NBA, like, you're like, oh, that guy hasn't been traded yet. He hasn't been on more than two teams before, or one team. That's an anomaly in the NBA, which is why Steph is so special, which is why the Luka thing feels so crazy, because I think Dallas fans figured that he was just going to be a Mavs for life like Dirk Nowitzki was. And so I feel bad because I've not watched 1 second of Andrew Wiggins play basketball since the Warriors traded him.
Yeah, it's kind of how it goes, man.
And I just feel like Wiggs was, you know, Wiggs wasn't like my favorite player, but like I liked watching him play. I liked the way he played basketball.
And did you watch Clay's first game as a Maverick? The very first one?
I don't know if I saw the first game, but you know, there's highlights and there's YouTube clips and there's Twitter.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything
on Twitter.
Nothing for Wiggs. Yeah, that team's been struggling.
So I took a look at his numbers post Golden State. He's playing a lot more. He's playing more than 5 minutes more a game on the Heat than he was on the Warriors. He is at he's shooting more. He's not shooting as well. His three ball has kind of gone awry, even though he's shooting it more in Miami. You know what he's doing though? He's getting to the line two more times a game. Well, he's taking two more foul shots a game in Miami. His assist numbers now, small sample size, only six games versus 43 for the Warriors. His assists and his rebounds and his steals and his blocks are up, but also his turnovers. So I think he's actually, you know, he's actually getting the basketball more. That's what those numbers would tell me without seeing. And, you know, they've won their last two games. I would love to see them hang around in that play in. I think they're seventh right now. So I don't think they're catching the Pistons. I think the Pistons, you know, the Pistons have been hot. They're nine out of their last 10. And so they have a chance. The Pistons could actually have a chance of getting all the way up to four in the East.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're going to have to stay hot, but the Heat look like they're probably going to be right at the top of the play-in. They are 28 and 30. Magic are 29 and 32. Hawks are 27 and 33. Bulls are 24 and 36.
Yeah, and I think we just got a Suggs update, too, from the Magic side.
Yeah, he had arthroscopic knee surgery, right?
Yes.
So that timetable, who knows what that timetable is going to be for him.
Yeah, out indefinitely.
And, you know, if they had Suggs, they probably beat the Warriors.
Yeah, they probably
the other day. So, yeah, I would love to see Miami, you know, maybe win that play in, and they're probably facing Boston, which is kind of good for them in a sense because they have good history against them, but they don't have the same horses.
Their good history is because of one player. So.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's nice for the league to have those two teams face each other because you know they don't like each other, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Now let's take a look at the Warriors. Where do you think, can they catch the Clippers? Do you think it's realistic? Because they're only a half game behind the Clippers for six.
So realistic.
But a lot of Warriors fans almost feel like this is a done deal. I'm not sure it's a done deal. And I think Jimmy, you know, taking that hard fall and getting back spasms just reminds you of the fact that the three best players on the Warriors are all in their mid-30s and at any point could get hurt and miss a game here and there. Because in order for the Warriors to get six, I think they're going to have to play like, you know, 700 basketball and hope that the Clippers, you know, play 500 basketball. And then you're feeling pretty good about themselves. And if you do that and all of a sudden the Rockets start falling, then, you know, then you get some noise about five. But I'm not sure that I can anoint Warriors at six right now. They don't play I don't know how many times. Actually, I should look at this. Do they play the Clippers again? They play the Lakers. They play the Rockets. They play the Nuggets. They play the Suns, and they play the Clippers.
The very last game.
Get this one. The last game of the season. Is that game going to be meaningful basketball? What? That's very great much scheduling, NBA. Good job.
Yep. The Clippers are 4 of 6 in their last 10 and the Warriors are 7 and 3.
Yes.
And they just lost against the Lakers. Man, I hope let's see if I can find like the Clippers schedule. Like, what does it look like for these guys?
You know, the main problem is against their own division, the Warriors are 2 and 10. They have the worst interdivision record in the entire Western Conference.
Yeah, that makes sense. I thought they were bad. I thought they were really bad. And it sounds like they played a lot of them in that first half.
Yeah.
Not as much in the second half. But the Clippers, they had the Lakers on Friday, and they have the Lakers again today. I feel like they might win that one.
It's a home and home's not really that big of a deal, but is that at Intuit or is that at
No, Crypto? We're at Crypto.
Okay.
And then they have at Phoenix, and they have Detroit at home, New York at home, Sacramento at home, at New Orleans, at Miami, at Atlanta, home Charlotte, home Cleveland, home Memphis, home OKC. Like it's known that the Warriors have like one of the easiest schedules remaining in the league. Like I just like looked at theirs and I look at the Warriors, like the Warriors does look easier. So
it is easier,
very realistic. It's dependent on the health of these older players. Like,
Okay. But March is clearly easier for the Warriors. There's some home games. I mean, there's some road games here, though. But the Warriors are actually probably a better road team than a home team at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But you have Hornets, Knicks.
A win.
Knicks is a loss without Jimmy, but with Jimmy, I think they can play with the Knicks for sure. Yeah. And Cat, you know, Cat's had some injury issues of late. The Nets are tough, man. The Nets are a tough matchup for the Warriors. So they go into
winning.
They go into Brooklyn on Thursday, and then the Warriors get the Pistons at home. That is tougher today than it was maybe 2 weeks ago when we looked at the schedule. But then they get the Trailblazers, the Kings, then the Knicks come here, Nuggets come here, Bucks come here, Raptors come here. So they have a nice home series. But once you get to April, and this is where I kind of wonder if they're going to fall off, because April at Grizzlies, at Lakers, Nuggets here, Rockets here, at Suns, Spurs here, which without Wemby, that's a much easier game for them.
Yeah.
And then at Trailblazers, who are spunky at the very least, though they will probably want to lose that game. And then the Clippers come here. So I think March is favorable, but when you get to like the nitty gritty of the between the Clippers and the Warriors, the last like six games look to be pretty tough. But at the same time, again, the NBA schedule makers want these, you know, they kind of predicted correctly who was going to be kind of in that mix, and it's going to be really fun. I just worry because Steve Kerr yesterday, you know, people were clamoring for Steph to play a little bit more to win that game. And he's like, look, we got three and 4 days. And if I push him to 40 just to win this one game, then what do I do for these next few games that they have? Those games are going to be tough games too. Maybe not Charlotte. And I guess my thought would be, if it wasn't Charlotte And instead, let's say it was Washington. You could sit, you could have a scheduled rest for Steph and just kind of maybe instead of playing him 35, maybe get up to 38 in this Sixers game. And then maybe you can steal it. But because it's Charlotte, he has to play in Charlotte. Like you can't, the Charlotte fans would think the Warriors are the evil empire if they sat Steph for rest in his hometown.
Yeah. I mean, is this with expectation that Jimmy's playing? Because I don't even know if they beat Charlotte with no Steph or Jimmy.
Like Kuminga game.
Oh yeah.
JK. JK. The new power couple, JK and Gee, just killing the Hornets.
I'm excited to see. I mean, it's been what, 26 straight games or something like that? Like I heard him say something on the broadcast last night where it's been like 20 something games since he has played. So,
and he has a reason to play well because that they're the
contract talk.
And not only that, but if Draymond and Steph and Jimmy want to see JK stick around and get paid, the best way to do that is to just win and make a run in the playoffs. Not that that's the main focus for them, but you know, Draymond has always said he believes that it's his job to get his young players to the next contract. And that would be what this is for JK. And if you are the Warriors, okay, so here are two completely alternate scenarios. Let's say that Jimmy's not healthy and Dre and Steph aren't playing well. Let's say the Warriors fall all the way like to 9 or something, and then they don't even make the playoffs. Then the front office has a decision to make on, do you spend the money on JK or do you trade him for something else? The alternate is to get to the 6, maybe win a playoff series, and then you go, okay, we bring it all back next year and maybe we add another piece and we make a run. Like that's your best case scenario for JK. So it is incentivized for them to play well and win. But at the same time, this Jimmy Butler injury did remind me, because as someone who has had back spasms several times in my life, sometimes like if you get back spasms, like it is hard to move. And I've had scenarios where I kind of get out of bed and I immediately fall to my knees because the pain is so crippling. And to try and get back up, it's like you need help and you need to like breathe through it. And you need to like use, like it's not fun. And I imagine in order for him to not play, it probably had to be a pretty bad scenario for him. So
I almost wish it was like more just precautionary, you know, but we will see. Yeah. Like that. It's just very, yeah, very dependent on how Kuminga plays when he gets back. He's obviously going to need probably like a couple games, just like most players do, to get back into the swing of things, but they don't really have just a couple of games to just like give it up for chance. So, you know, it's very dependent on how he comes back, but also it's just, you know, I feel like we knew what we were doing when we traded for a 35-year-old superstar, you know, and someone who historically doesn't play as much in the regular season. So
gun to your head is such a terrible,
yeah, we need a different one
way to say it. JJ comes to you for betting advice. He's going to put money on either the Warriors finishing 6th or 7th.
I'm going 6th. I'm going on the optimistic side.
Okay. I like it. I don't like betting. This is why, but I would probably lean 7 just because I just get really worried. But then again, they showed that they could reel off winning streaks with this team, and you get to see Steph at his best. And I think we are seeing Steph at his best. So if Steph at his best is going to be the guy, I think 6 is there. Conservatively, 7 is fine, but you know, I think 6 is definitely gettable, and that would be an amazing story for them to actually race to 6, and it would make Mike Dunleavy look like a pretty smart guy, and yeah. It would make, you know, it, it would give the Warriors an opportunity. Plus, I hate the play-in. They suck so bad at this play-in.
They have yet to win a play-in game.
Oh, God, so bad. All right, let's talk a little bit Valkyries.
Valks Valley.
Home run.
So I don't even think we've talked about this, but one of the Warriors' expansion draft picks is supposed to be coming to the team, and there was some wonderment about whether or not she would come. You told me Carla
late.
So it looks like she is going to be on the team next year, which is good because they need bodies and she's a capable body. I don't think she made the Olympic team, but she was like one of the cuts, I think, on the Olympic team. She's a point guard. That's always exciting. What do you know about her and what do you think about, from the perspective of like, yeah, she can literally start and be their point guard to start the season, or she's like a bench player. Like, what are your thoughts?
She'll probably start on the bench. She's young. She's development. Like, this is like a development piece we're talking about that hopefully by the end of the season, or, you know, maybe, you know, by the middle of that, she's a starter. Like, that would be a big win. But just thinking about their personnel already, they have Tiffany Hayes, who is probably going to be like their best player from a scoring perspective. She's like a guard. Kate Martin's kind of like a guard. So it might be, we'll see how she fits her way into the lineup, but she's like I want to say she's like 5'9 or 5'10, 5'8 to 5'10 range guard who kind of can do a lot of everything. So she was on France's Euro Cup qualification games. Like, it's not like the final roster. It's like, I think France had already qualified and they still had games to play. So then they kind of brought up like the B team. And I think just because she's super young, she would probably still be on like that B team. Mm-hmm. And I was watching that because, you know, France, the Valkyries seem to just love the country of France. And they have Janelle Salon from that team. They have Ileana Rupert from that team. We have Carla Late from that team. And then obviously I would love for them to draft Dominique Malonga on that team. So I have watched that team a lot, and man, I think Ileana Rupert and Janelle Salon are going to be really good for us. But the hope is that Carla, like, is it even confirmed that she's coming? Because I know she signed the rookie scale contract, but I don't even know if that means like she's coming yet. So yeah, because essentially just if she doesn't, then the rookie scale contract just doesn't start, which is kind of weird to sign it now, mm-hmm. considering what it could look like next year if she signed it next year. So maybe she will just head over. So I don't know. But I think Valkyries fans will like her. She could just do a little bit of everything. I've seen her hit threes. I've seen her, you know, have effective drives. She has a good ball handler. I think she has a really good passing IQ. I don't know. Just like she passes the ball well, makes the right decisions on the passes. Like, so I think she's just kind of like your do-it-all guard. But I'd say passing is her best ability. I haven't seen the mid-range as much. I haven't seen like the floater game, but I've seen like the, you know, three-point and the drives.
Diana Taurasi retired, so we were kind of wondering if she was going to stick around. Her team kind of got dismantled a little bit as we await next year's CBA and all the moves that have happened. How much did you ever see her play before you started watching the WNBA?
Probably, like, that's like the one name I knew, you know, like her, like Brittany Griner and Candace Parker were like the three players I like knew of, mm-hmm. You know, before starting to watch. So I know you went and actually saw her live.
Yeah. It was her against Skylar Diggins. And I think she got kicked out of the game. I think she got like two techs and they booted her out of the game, which the funny thing about her is, she also, I think, leads the WNBA history in number of texts that she's actually received.
Yeah.
But I forget, was Skylar on Seattle?
Skylar could have been on Phoenix. She was on Phoenix, like, very within that time frame.
Maybe that's what it was. But that was the first WNBA game and only so far that I'd ever been to, was to see her. And obviously, that's why I wanted to go, was to see her.
Yeah.
You know, we will, people still talk about college women's basketball like this, in that, like, oh, this player reminds me of this male player, which means she could, you know, she could really play because she reminds me of this male player. I think we're going to move away from discussing basketball like that. But I do remember when she was young and I was like, oh, she's like Jason Kidd. If Jason Kidd had like had scoring moves rather than just kind of, you know, at the end of Jay's career, he would just kind of go in the corner and shoot threes. Most of Jason Kidd's scoring ability was his ability to kind of get to the middle because he was like a physical guard. But I was like, she is like Jason Kidd if she could score or if she was more score first. Like, that's what she reminded me of. And, you know, that, you know, all, you would always, back in the day, people would go, oh, like she could, you know, she could play with dudes. Well, all of these women could play with dudes. Like, they're the best players, you know, out there. But then, you know, when we weren't as knowledgeable about this stuff, that's how people would sort of compare. Oh, she could play, you know, she'd be
the
best player in a pickup game against dudes. Like, no, she would dominate you all, like, ridiculously. But I just remember watching her and thinking, like, man, like, she, like, if Jason Kidd could play like her, Jason Kidd would have been like an all timer. But yeah, she was tremendous. Like, she had the college resume, she had the Olympic resume, she had the WNBA resume, and I know that most of the time she was always overseas. Not that we keep track of those titles or those awards or anything, but just one of the singular names in women's college basketball over the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Is that going to go down as one of the greats to my knowledge? So again, haven't seen as, I'm not as historically versed, but I know Cheryl Swoops is probably up there. Lisa Leslie's probably up there. There's that one player that has like three MVPs that like never gets talked about. And she's like tied in MVPs with Asia and Cheryl. And I'm forgetting, I think it's like Lauren, like some player from like Australia or something, Lauren Johnson. I don't know, but
we should know this.
I swear she just like doesn't get talked about, and she was like playing minutes in the Olympics at like 40 something. Like had like 5 minutes per game, but she's like has three MVPs, three MVP WNBA.
Yeah, Lauren Jackson. I was right.
Nice,
Lauren Jackson in 2003, 2007, 2010, she was the WNBA MVP.
Oh, Lisa Leslie's won three too. Wow. That's what Google AI is saying. But yeah, she's going to go down. I mean, Diana's going to go down as one of the GOATs. Four titles? Was it four titles at UConn as well? Like when she was, I forget if it was four in a row, but she, I mean, she has national titles. She has the championship. She literally has every single qualification for like the GOAT status that you could probably think of.
There's a quote in I don't remember which story it was about her, but supposedly there was, I think it was during the Olympics, probably not. I don't know if it was the 2021 Olympic game, whatever one that Draymond was on. Was that 2016? Whatever the Olympic team that Draymond was on.
It was on the 2021.
Supposedly, she was in a discussion with all of these great male basketball players, and they were capping on each other and, you know, just trash-talking each other. And she kind of dropped the mic by saying, Draymond, how does it feel to be the only one in this room who never gets double-teamed?
That's a bar.
That was amazing. She also, I remember, this had to be three years ago, ABC, and this was kind of like special, they promoted during Sue Bird's last season, Diana and Sue Bird, they were going head-to-head. I don't know if it was the playoffs or not, but it was like a big focus on ABC. And that's when you started to see like the women's bat, them leaning into it a little bit more. And so I remember that. And then there's also the story. I feel like I've heard the story a bunch of times where on her first Olympic team, they kind of asked her, you know, she asked like, what do you want me to do? Cause she's coming right out of college. Like, how do you want me to fit in? And they said, you know, just be your young self. Like, you know, be the young is a veteran team. We need the young energy. So I think one of the first games, she comes to the game and she brought two left shoes. And that was on accident. It wasn't purposeful, but like she leaned into that young energy by not having her proper shoes. So
for a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
All right. There's been a shakeup, like we mentioned, in at the top of the leaderboard in women's college basketball. USC whooped on UCLA again.
Man, I thought that was going to be different. I thought that they were going to figure it out. And USC runs LA, man. I hate to say it. Not that I'm like rooting against them, but I actually was hoping for UCLA to win that game.
So now they got it. What do you think? They're going to probably jump to number two now.
So,
right?
Yeah, what it was is that it was like number one, Texas, number two, UCLA, number three was Notre Dame, and number four was USC. So
because Notre
happen.
Dame lost twice in it a row, did. So they're going to drop. So they're yeah, USC to has to be number two now.
USC is going to be number two. UCLA is probably going to be number four. I wonder if like they give like South Carolina or UConn like a bump to number three. But yeah, that's most likely going to be the change. I'm shocked. That's the only two games this team has lost is against USC.
Not that we have a local rooting interest in women's college basketball, because Stanford women are down this year.
Berkeley.
Cal yeah. women are actually okay.
I don't think they're ranked anymore, but yeah.
San Jose State.
Come on. What are we doing?
Yeah. But, you know, they should be able to be better than they are. But who's going to be your rooting interest when it comes to tournament? Obviously, last year, we're all kind of wanting to see what Caitlin was going to be able to do, and she did fantastic. Like, she got them as far as she possibly could. Stanford, there was a Stanford interest because of Cam and because of Kiki. We got to see Kiki kind of come to life in that tournament. I think I'm rooting for UConn just because I want to see Paige. I want to see her pull this team up and make them, you know, a Final Four run, you know, that kind of thing. I obviously, you know, USC and Kiki and Juju, like, you want to see them play well. We saw UCLA live, so I have a little bit of a rooting interest there just because I'm like, I got to see this. So if you were to kind of pick your favorite, and I'm sure you have a couple teams that you're rooting for, but mostly because of the players involved. But if you had to pick, like, who's going to be your number one team that you're going to root for to win the title?
Oh, man. Number one team. It's not going to happen, but maybe I'll say, like, NC State. Since I don't have a rooting interest, like, I just
you've been watching them pretty closely, because
I did see them live. I went and saw them play Stanford because I really like Saniah Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
But
they got a lot of talk about them on one of the last athletic podcasts. They spent a lot of time talking about
as they should. They beat Notre Dame, but Isaiah James, just a bucket. Saniah Rivers, like, to me, like, guards one through four and some fives. Like, she looks like maybe the most athletic player but sometimes I feel like she just like that motor. I just need to see it. Like to me, she has the potential to be, and I don't know, I'm doing the thing where I compare it to NBA players, but to me, she kind of feels like she could be like a Amen Thompson. Like the shooting ability is
athletic, athletic, crazy freak.
With really athletic, crazy freak, but with actual serious ball handling skills, like with on ball potential. So, but I don't even know if that player, how that player fits in the WNBA. Cause it's not, we're not in the same era of what, you know, is successful in the NBA is not successful in the WNBA, vice versa.
Aren't you going to be happy when you're knowledgeable enough to compare to historical women's?
I know.
And so here's my request to the WNBA. Because the WNBA has so many new fans, I would love to see, I don't know where they would do this. I don't know if it's on League Pass. I don't know if it's on, you know, YouTube or whatever. But if they could create 20-minute videos of the story of each year, and we could just watch those.
I would watch that all.
Because I know a lot of the players, because I was reading Sports Illustrated and I was following, you know, a lot of the main stories. But there's a, you know, there's a long time period where I wouldn't have known what was going on in college basketball, women's college basketball, or WNBA. And I want to get caught up, but there's just no real easy way to get caught up. I would love to see the history of the league, whether that's in book form. I'm kind of on and off reading a book about sort of the evolution of women's college basketball. And I think it ends sort of around the time that the WNBA started. So this is an older book, but I want like that history of the league. And maybe there's a book out there that I couldn't find. That's
kind
of,
if anyone knows, send this.
You know, that's about the W. I would just love to see more information that will allow us to deep dive into players and stories and teams to gain that historical knowledge. And
I also need to look and see if my WNBA League Pass does that thing that the NBA League Pass used to do or still does do, was just like access to all the finals, like the finals history. I need
that would be cool. And because that's a great way too, right? Because I was looking, there's, I don't know if you saw this, but during the pandemic, they filmed stuff about how the WNBA kind of came back in this whole, all the discussion about whether or not they were going to finish the season. So I watched that, which was really interesting. And I watched the 30 for 30 on Candace Parker, which was really interesting. I thought that was actually pretty good. Dave Jacoby's wife produced that one.
Mm.
But there's just not a lot of content. Like I want historical content about the WNBA. And this is not because I'm a lazy fan, but that is how, when I was a kid, that is how I learned the history of Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NFL, because a lot of what ESPN content was back in the day were these video packages of the history of the leagues. And so, like, I just want that for the WNBA, because I feel like I would just absorb all of it and learn so much. And then you can make these contextual things, these comparisons and such. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about the draft board, but more so as it pertains to AZ Fudd. Now, the only thing I knew about AZ Fudd was like she had some deal with Curry Brand, and like she was kind of propped up as maybe Steph's first, was it an NIL deal, or like what was that deal? Because I just remember her being like a young player and like getting on his Instagram and everything, but that was I don't know how many years ago that was.
Yeah, I mean, she's the first, to my knowledge, like the very first signature athlete to sign with the Curry Brand. It was like her, she was number one. Like, you know how Fox is signed to the Curry Brand? Like, she was the first one signed to the Curry Brand. And then I think Malaysia Fool Wiley was shortly after.
So she has had a history of ups and downs in college.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's another reason to root for UConn, right? Is to have her show out. But she's starting to get in the conversation when it comes to the draft. And I think early in the season, we sort of thought that she'd maybe come back for another year, But now there's talk about maybe her stock is high enough to where, you know, she's moving up into that, you know, top five, top six area where the Valkyries are drafting. And I know you're a big fan of hers. So what do you know about her, that upcoming decision, and where do you put her on that list? Like you've talked about some of the players that you want for them, but those players may not be available in that five slot. So What do you think about her value as a possibility for the Valkyries?
I think so. Just a little bit of my knowledge about the player is that she was the number one prospect in her class, which is this class with, you know, that's going out, that's about to get drafted right now. Of course, Paige is the returner from the Paige number one for her year. Then the following year, it was AZ Fudd coming out of high school. And then Paige is fifth year in it. But she has another year of eligibility because, like Paige, she missed like an entire year, maybe even two entire years of her college season. Like she's kind of had a bad go about it with the injury stuff. And that could be a little bit of hesitancy when it comes to drafting. But when she, like, I had no previous experience of watching her before this year. So I had to wait until, like, you know, maybe I think it was like 10 or 12 games in that she made her return. And then she made her return. And I was like, okay, I'm kind of interested to see what kind of player, like how she plays. And like, just so smart, like has, I think, you know, I think she gets called related to like Clay in the sense of just their shooting form looks like picture perfect. Like every time she shoots it, it looks like a picture perfect form. I think it has a chance of going in. Really good defender. Like she does everything. So I think that, you know, if you rank this draft class based on potential, She's very, very high. But at the same time, I think that there is realistic potential with her. Whereas, you know, with the Sinai Rivers is like a lot of potential, but, you know, kind of a, maybe like a lower floor or however you say it. But I think that if AZ declares and if she's somehow available at five, like I think the Valkyrie should snatch her up right away. And the pathway to her being available at five is if you go Paige one, like in some order, Paige one, Olivia Miles two, then Washington has picks three and four. If they go Dominique Malanga and like Sonia Citron, then there's a pathway for AZ to be available at five.
Okay, but then they're jumping Kiki, who I think from a, yeah, I've said this before, I think
AZ's a bigger star.
But from a marketing standpoint to this very new audience, Kiki's probably still marketing pick.
Dude, imagine how much Steph is going to be involved and like the Curry if she's on this team.
If Steph says, Joe, you draft her and I'm around, then maybe, yeah, like, maybe that swings the mentality. I just think,
Joe, stay out of Ohema's, stay out of her room.
Steph doesn't have to be involved, or Steph and Joe don't have to be involved from the perspective of like, you know, getting into the weeds too much, but if you do get AZ and that comes with Steph propping her up and helping the franchise, then yeah, then that's part of the decision. I just think Kiki's ties here and Tara becoming a Valkyries fan and maybe even, you know, a little bit of a Bay Area pipeline perspective, I think that would be awesome for how the sort of the community kind of takes to the team. But yeah, I don't think you can go wrong either way unless Kiki is just not who we thought she would be, because there's lots of talk about that, about her prospect. And we had Sabrina on this show and she kind
Sabrina
of
was a little, it wasn't that high. I felt like kind of just hearing her talk about Kiki didn't feel like she thought that she could hit that potential, where Kiki entered the year as like the clear cut number two pick. And that was my opinion as well. And now she's fallen all the way to potentially five or six.
Okay. But here's a possibility with the AZ as well. The injuries.
I know. I'm worried about Kiki's prospect. I feel like she heard the noise and this past game against UCLA, like she was kind of cooking. But a lot of her shots, like that, when I watch her at UCLA or USC, is just, it's just a lot of in the paint stuff. And I'm like, you're 6'3". It's important that you can finish in the paint like the way you do, but it's like, you're not, you know, once you get to the W, like you're not like Asia's 6'3 or 6'4 and she doesn't play the five. So yeah. like, you know, you, I have to see like those mid range jumpers. Like I have to see more of it. And she, I feel like she shoots like some games she does, some games she doesn't. But I think, and again, I think I've said this on the podcast before, because I watch her so much, I'm definitely like grading her on more of a, like there's different ways you grade prospects. Like to me, I'm like, I think that there's a chance you can be like one of the best players. Like I do have like a high standard for her. I think she could be one of the best players in the W. That was my thought when I first started like watching her. I was like, I think she could be one of the best players in the W. Give me reasons why that won't be the case. And I feel like she's given me a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Paige hasn't really, and like Olivia Miles, I didn't have that perspective of her, but like she, you know, so it's just, I'm worried about like her just like every time, like I swear, watch her pass. And I'm just like, it's never on target. Like, you ever play with that player where you just know that like the pass you're about to get is like not going to be in the on the money. Like you're going to have to like move a little to get it.
Yeah.
Like that's what I've been feeling when I watch her. And again, maybe I'm not looking at that for different prospects. So it's just like trying to understand better how to do the scout, because yeah, I think I am a tougher critic on her. But again, it's because I think my team has a chance at getting her. So,
you know,
I think it's likely that she is available at five. I think it is very likely that she's available at five.
I don't know why we're even talking about this. Joe's jumping to number one and we're getting Paige. That's all I got to say.
There you go.
All right, before we get out of here, I was thinking about this for a weekly segment, because you're a big movie buff and you're going to see movies every week these days. And mm-hmm. just to kind of talk about, you know, maybe, you know, there's a blogger, or not a blogger, he's a writer, but there's a I think it's a Substack now, what's Alan watching, and he's been doing this for years and years and years. So maybe we'll have like a what's Bri watching segment in the future. But Oscar picks, I will have this up in audio form before the Oscars. So give me your pick for movie, director, and lead actor and actress for tonight's show.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be surprised if it goes any other way than, and this is not necessarily who I think should win. It's just who I think will win. Like it wouldn't be my picks per se, but actually Anora Best Picture would be my pick. Sean Baker Best Director would be my pick as well. So I'll just go off of what I think is going to happen first, actually. Best Picture, Anora. Best Director, Sean Baker. Best Actor, Adrian Brody. Best Actress, Demi Moore. Best Supporting Actor, Kieran Culkin. Best Supporting Actress, Zoe Saldana. Best Adapted Screenplay is going to be Conclave, and Best Original is going to be Anora.
Okay, so no Chalamet, huh?
No Chalamet. That's the one where I think it could flip his way. Like, if there's one that has, like, out of the actor, actress, supporting stuff, like, if there's one that has a chance to not be who I said it was, it's going to be Best Actor between him and Chalamet.
I'm definitely interested in what you think about Queen of the Ring. Now, it would be, I know you have your spot in San Francisco and it would be hard to see that movie together, but that would be a fun one because I could probably help you immediately with what's the real and what's the fake the movie. But Queen of the Ring, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I have the screener, or I have access to the screener, but I kind of want to see it on the big screen. And that comes out this upcoming weekend. But yeah, I think what's Bri watching might be a way to end this show for all the movie files.
Do you know who Queen of the Ring, like the actress is?
Emily something or other.
Do you remember where she comes from?
Uh-uh.
She's very close to home for me.
Really?
You remember the Arrow show that me and JJ used to watch?
Yeah.
She was Felicity. She was the woman in the wheelchair. Like, she was like the main lead or supporting in that show to Oliver Queen, the Arrow. So it's cool to see her in this role.
And she's all buffed out too. She's got,
yeah, that gives me like a different, like, I don't know if I was gonna see, I mean, I probably was gonna see it, but her being in it, I think, gives me a little like, I'm for sure gonna go see it now.
Yeah, there's actually current wrestlers today who are in the movie as well.
Who is it?
Toni Storm is in it. You wouldn't have seen her, I don't think. Originally, Charlotte Flair was going to be in it, but I don't think WWE let her be in it. Let's see. Who else is it? Naomi from current WWE.
Yep.
She's in it. I don't know why she was able to be in it and Charlotte wasn't. So that's kind of weird. Actually, Naomi might have been gone from WWE when.
I mean, yeah, like filming probably would have taken her away from the ring. Like, imagine, like.
Well, Naomi was without contract in WWE. She was working for different places last year. Who else is in it that you would know?
I just looked at the cast and I don't know if I knew anyone.
Jim Cornette is in it, which he's more from like when I was younger than your wrestling days. But it should be interesting. I've read 20% of the book that it's based on, and the book is really good. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. All right, we're done here. We're just kind of gabbing at the end. But all right, so we'll be back next week. I mean, they play another game on Thursday, so we're going to have to be creative. Maybe another weekend show based off of your schedule for next week. But yeah, we'll be back for Bri. I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.